1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It is Feldis and Kale. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Dan Feldis is on a brief sabbatical today, and taking his place and filling his shoes is the executive director of Granite State Dairy Promotion. You've heard her on this show many times, Amy Hall. Amy, how are you today?
Ken, I am doing absolutely fantastic. It's, number one, been a long time since I've seen you in person. What a joy that is. And number two, it's been a long time since I've been physically behind a microphone other than an actual iPhone.
Well, there you go. So, and you, by the way, Amy, are our first in-studio guest here on Feldis and Kale. So you will always have that as you know, part of your resume.
I love it. I'm going to put that right on there. I'm going to update my LinkedIn page during the next break.
Oh, there you go. Okay. All right. Amy is with us, and we'll be talking dairy, and we have a very interesting guest coming up a little bit later on in the program. But first, Amy, I wanted to congratulate both the Concord High School baseball team and the Concord High School softball team. Both made it to their championship games. The baseball team won the state championship under their head coach, Scott Owen, with a resounding win over Winnicunnet at historic Holman Stadium. And the softball team, well, they did make it to the championship game, but they lost to Salem in the championship. But what a season it was for both teams, and I'm sure both, Amy, were energized by chocolate milk.
Oh, I know for sure that they absolutely were. If you were at any of these championship games, I bet you saw the Refuel with Chocolate Milk banner hanging on the fences. As people may or may not know, Granite State Dairy Promotion and New Hampshire Dairy Farmers have a great partnership with the NHIAA, and we've made chocolate milk the official recovery beverage of New Hampshire High School Athletics. So we're very proud of that, and we're really encouraged by the support of the coaches, the NHIAA staff, the nutritionists who are involved, who all say, you know what, we agree 100% that, you know, low-fat chocolate milk is definitely the best way to help these fine young men and women and athletes recover after a tough game, a tough workout, a tough practice. So congratulations to all the athletes, specifically Concord. Way to go. We're super proud, and we hope you enjoyed the chocolate milk.
I'm sure that they did. Now, you mentioned low-fat chocolate milk, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's differing studies here. And one of the things that I have to do as a checkoff organization is really lean into a lot of these official studies. And to date, most of the studies about recovering or refueling with chocolate milk has, you know, been central around low-fat chocolate milk. There have been several studies on whole milk, too, which prove that, you know, whole milk hydrates you better. Whole milk also keeps you fuller longer. So, you know, maybe a few hours before you run a marathon or participate in a tough game, that fullness, that healthy, wholesome fullness actually helps you perform better. So the science is different. And I just say low-fat chocolate milk when I'm talking in terms of recovery. Whole milk is really, really good for that, for the real healthy fat and for the hydration purposes after you participate in an event.
So there you go. And all of the high school teams fueled by chocolate milk. And I have seen the banners. I was not able to attend the championship games, but I have seen the banners at various sporting events in the last month or so. Saw them during the hockey event, and we're still looking for that coach. In fact, I wish I had contacted Scott Owen, the head coach of Concord High School baseball. You know, Scott could have been the first coach doused in chocolate milk after a championship, but we'll have to set that up. We have to get that going, because you know, Mike Ramshaw volunteered for it, the president of the Fisher Cats, if the Fisher Cats win their championship. So we'll have to get somebody lined up, and I'm sure Dunk Walsh, who's the head coach of the Concord High School hockey team, the defending champs. I'm sure Dunk would be game for it, you know, if Concord should win the state hockey championship again.
Well, I love the idea, Ken, and what I'm going through my brain right now, because we love to be first in the nation to
That's
do
right.
everything.
That's
and
right.
To my knowledge, we don't have anyone out there having chocolate milk dumped over their head after a major victory. So,
I don't think so.
Anybody listening to this, if you would like to be the pillar, the first in the nation title holder, similar to me being the first in-studio guest here, first in the nation, you should do it. I feel like New Hampshire should make this a thing. Give us something else to be proud of, right?
Absolutely. We're proud of a lot of things, and that could be added to the list very easily. But we have to make sure that, you know, we have a film crew there, you know, to record the event.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That goes without saying.
Yeah.
It'd be so great to get that all over the news. I agree, Ken. Let's make this happen. There's going to be coaches out there listening. You know what? Even if you don't win a championship, even if it's the last game of the season and you win that one, we'll take anything. We'll take anything here.
We will. To be first
yes,
in the nation.
Exactly.
And, you know, I hope we can still hold on to that first in the nation title when it comes to our presidential primary. I really and truly do, because, you know, that is synonymous with the state of New Hampshire. And I'm afraid if they, you know, federalize all these voting rules, as many would like to do, that it could, you know, hurt our status as first in the nation as far as the primary is concerned. But, you know, we shall see how that goes when they finally take a vote. If they take a vote on the what's being called the For the People Act, which might be a misnomer, but nonetheless, we hope to remain first in the nation in that regard as well. And I know you follow the news closely, Amy. We are going to have a new federal holiday commemorating the end of slavery. House voted 415-14 on Wednesday to make Juneteenth or June 19th the 12th federal holiday.
That's great. I support that wholeheartedly, and not just because it's a holiday. I just think it's we've gone an awful, awful long time throughout history, all of it, to not recognize that day in the manner in which it should be recognized. So I'm happy to hear that, holiday or not. It's really important to our history, and it's something that as a country and a nation, we should all be proud to celebrate that.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And that will be commemorated on or around June 19th. So it's Juneteenth. And I know in many areas it's already commemorated, and this is going to make it a federal holiday. I don't know when that is going to start, but it has to go to the president's desk, and I have no doubt that our president will sign that bill, and it will go into law. 14 voted against it, and all Republicans.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I don't know how you could vote against it. I really don't. I mean, no matter what your political slant may be, I don't know how you could vote against a bill that would commemorate and celebrate the end to slavery in this country. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But I know on the other topic of the first in the nation primary, I'm sure that our Secretary of State, Bill Gardner, will do everything within his power to help us maintain that first in the nation primary. The next is coming up, of course, in 2024.
Yeah. And, you know, props to Bill as well, because this has been, you know, people have been trying to rob us of first in the nation for quite a few years now. And without Mr. Gardner, I feel like we quite possibly would have lost this years ago. So I have to personally give him some props for his efforts to keep us first, because just like you, Ken, I think it's extremely important to preserve and protect the history of how this works and the precedent that New Hampshire has the ability to set nationwide.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's a very important time in our state, for sure. And it, and frankly, does a lot for our economy. And it kind of puts New Hampshire on the map. I mean, it does. Let's face it. I mean, the media from all over the world flock to New Hampshire for the presidential primary, and we don't want to see that go away.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Amy Hall is with us, Executive Director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, our proud sponsors here on Feldis and Kale. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right here, 103.9 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. 103.9, 1450, WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And we've talked for a number of weeks now about the ice cream trail, and it's been underway now for about 3 weeks as you listen to this program. And I'm trying to count. I think I've done six, Amy.
Wow, Ken.
Six of the 42. And I was at one the other day, and it was Richardson's Farm in Boscawen.
Oh, I love them.
Oh, man. I have to tell you, now, I mentioned on a previous Feldis and Kale broadcast when you were on with us, Amy, I mentioned that my favorite flavor, and I think I get this from my mother, and maybe it's in honor of my mother, my favorite ice cream flavor is rum raisin.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. So, I went to Richardson's the other day, which is, they make their own ice cream, and, oh, man, I am telling you, Amy, without a shadow of a doubt, the best rum raisin ice cream I have ever had. Ever had. They put, in fact, I guess it's a tradition there at Richardson's in Boscawen, that they put cherries in the rum raisin ice cream. So it was fantastic. It really, really was.
You know, Jim Richardson, I went up there once and had the opportunity. This was obviously a couple of years ago in 2019, and he, number one, is just an extreme character. He is funny. He'll make you laugh. He gave me a tour, actually,
really?
Of what happens behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And they're very unique where they are and what they do, in that they do make their own ice cream, but they do it in a way that no other shop on the trail does it. So they actually receive their cream from Hatchland Farm in its raw form, meaning not cream that's been pasteurized that they add. When I say they make this from scratch, I mean they have everything but the cow there to make it from scratch. And then from there, they run it through the pasteurizer and the vat machine, and their process, which I can't fully explain, is extremely complex, and they're extremely proud of what they do there, and they should be. So the tour that I got sort of left my jaw on the floor. And then, you know, my stomach grew quite a bit after that, because Jim, being the character that he is, he kept saying, "Now you have to try this ice cream. Now you have to try this ice cream." I think I must have had more ice cream in that 1 3-hour visit than I've had in 10 years. But every single bit of it was delicious. So the rum raisin with cherries, the creativity that he is and he has, I bet you, Ken, that it was the best rum raisin ice cream out there.
And not only that, can I make a true confession here? I mean, this is the real person, real people radio show here, Feldis and Kale. And, we take people behind the curtain. And, do you know, not only did I have rum raisin, but I also, knowing how good the rum raisin was, I had to try another favorite flavor of mine, and that's peppermint stick.
Ooh, that's a good one, Ken. Oh. I love peppermint stick. My ultimate favorite is cookies and cream, but in a close second, I'm with you on that one.
Oh, and I'm not, they don't advertise here, and I guess in a way they do, because they're part of the Granite State Dairy Promotion and part of the ice cream trail, but I will tell you that it was the best peppermint stick I've ever had, too. I I'm serious about that in all my years. And you know what? In some places, Because I like peppermint stick. I love it with hot fudge too. I didn't have it with hot fudge at Richardson's, but next time I go, I will. Because I had already had a big rum raisin, so I just wanted to try the peppermint stick. But the next time I go, I will have it with hot fudge. But a lot of places call peppermint stick seasonal ice cream.
Mm.
And I say, what season? I mean, is it supposed to be like a Christmas thing?
I think it is. Yeah. I think it's synonymous, and it's sort of psychologically tied to the candy cane, right, which is peppermint.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
People just, you know, it's almost like mint and St. Patrick's Day. You know, for some reason, they just correlate with holidays. But I think peppermint stick ice cream needs to be all year, every year, celebrated, not just one season.
I would agree. The first time I was told it was seasonal, I said, what season? But I guess it is the Christmas season. But at any rate, their peppermint stick, their rum raisin was unequivocally, Amy, the best I have ever had without doubt.
Yeah, and you know, if you do find yourself out that way, check out Highway View Farm, which is also in Bosquin. You may have passed it, Ken, on your way up King Street.
I think I did.
And, you know, they have a little farm market there down at the farm. Check out their Facebook page, though, because their hours do vary, of course. But, you know, they sell fruits and vegetables. And I will say, if you think Richardson's in Bosquin has the best ice cream, they're the ice cream kings in Bosquin. I will tell you what, Crete Corn at Highway View, their sweet corn, when the time comes, is the best sweet corn you can get in New Hampshire. And I don't want to upset anybody because sweet corn is delicious, and maybe I'm a little biased, but I've had a lot of it, and I can say with pure authority, they've got the best sweet corn around.
And I love corn on the cob. In fact, I had some. It was probably not grown in New Hampshire, but I did have some a couple of weeks ago with a lobster, and boy. I can't wait to get some of that New Hampshire corn.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of corn, you know, we were, you know, coming into the season transitioning, good transition into the dairy industry, right, in a little bit of a drought. So, you know, our dairy producers were getting worried, thinking, gosh, we can't handle, you know, another season of little to no rain. And the rule when it comes to corn, I don't know if you've ever heard this, Ken, but it's an old farmer's phrase that says, you know, you're going to have a good corn crop if it's knee high by the 4th of July.
Ah.
So, you know, they're doing the Great Corn Watch of 2021 over at Highway View Farm. Of course, they're doing it with the littles, the small kids on the farm. And I'm pleased to say that right now, it's knee high on the kids. So fingers crossed that come 4th of July on Adam, who runs the farm, it'll be knee high by the 4th of July. Not just there, but every farm who's growing their own corn.
Oh, man. I know my great-grandfather used to grow corn on a very small plot of land, relatively speaking, in Wilmington, Massachusetts. And, boy, he grew some great rows of corn, for sure, on a very... And he did it all on his own. Had cucumbers and rhubarb and you name it, all kinds of great stuff. And today, by the way, Amy, today as we broadcast this show, June 17th, it's National Eat Your Vegetables Day.
Well, that's a good day.
It is a good day.
We need a day like that.
We do, and we should do that. I mean, we can eat a lot of ice cream, which is terrific, and I'm you know learning more and more. I've gone to places that I have never been before because of the ice cream trail, and I'm only on number 6 or 7. I'm trying to add them up here in the book, but I've got my passport here in front of me, and I'll hit at least one more by the end of this week. So. I'm well on my way, Amy, to doing it.
Excellent. Ken, I have no doubt that you will complete it. I don't know if Dan's listening, but I'd like to know how many Dan has hit, because I guarantee you might be ahead of him. I don't know. It's just a feeling I have. I could be wrong.
I think your feeling is probably right. And it also gives you the opportunity, as I said, to explore the state of New Hampshire. Not only do you have great ice cream, you know, try to complete the passport. I know I'm not eligible to win the prizes, Amy. I know I'm not, but I'm just doing it to see if I can hit all of them and still lose weight. That's
Ken, you are absolutely, if you complete that whole trail, getting a sweatshirt. I mean, that's the thing. You are going in the grand prize drawing, because just because we do a radio show with you does not mean that you are not eligible to win a grand prize.
No.
Don't you think about it like that.
I won't disqualify myself.
Yes,
then.
Please don't. Please do not. You're getting a sweatshirt at least.
Well, okay. I won't deny that. I'll be happy to wear a sweatshirt.
Awesome.
From the Ice Cream Trail. Amy Hall is with us, and she is the executive director of Granite State Dairy Promotion. And coming up, we'll be talking dairy with a very special guest as we continue here on Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Amy, I believe we have a very special guest on the line.
Oh, is he with us now?
I believe so.
Excellent.
Good morning.
Morning.
Is this Dr. Erickson?
Yes, it is. You can call me Pete.
All right, we'll call you Pete, and Amy is going to give you a glowing introduction. I know she is.
Well, I'm going to give a little bit of a bio for you, Pete. So for the listeners to know, Dr. Peter Erickson is a professor and also an extension dairy specialist for UNH Cooperative Extension over at the College of Life Sciences and Agriculture at UNH. He has a Bachelor of Science in Animal Sciences from the University of Massachusetts Amherst, a Master of Science in Animal Sciences from University of Maine, and his PhD in Dairy Science from the University of Illinois. So, you know, Pete is an extremely intelligent man and does... No, Pete, you shouldn't laugh at that. It's all true. And does a lot of work at the Dairy Research Center in Durham, New Hampshire. And a lot of his work encompasses the area of calf and heifer nutrition. And his work has been published not only locally, of course, nationally, but globally as well. So, Pete, thank you for joining us. And I was hoping that you could talk to us a little bit more about the College of Life Sciences and Agriculture and the research you do there and how that impacts the dairy industry nationally and globally.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Amy. Yes. We'll call it COLSA, College of Life Science and Agriculture. Originally, as I think everyone knows, was the University of New Hampshire stems from the Morrill Land Grant Act, which occurred when Abraham Lincoln was president. And there's a interesting story about how it started in Dartmouth and was moved to Durham. And the whole focus of land grant universities is to study agriculture to help our food production, and that encompasses everything at UNH from, you know, animal science, which I am in, crops, horticulture, biochemistry, microbiology, forestry, agricultural and natural resource economics. So it encompasses a huge area, and agriculture being a major part of the university here. I'm a dairy scientist. Originally, after graduating from Illinois, I worked in the feed industry, in the pharmaceutical industry for 8 years and started at UNH in 1997. So I've been here a little while. we're very fortunate to have two dairy farms here at UNH. The one where my office is near the Fairchild Dairy, which has about 100 lactating Holstein cows, and then our organic dairy, and there's only two universities that have organic research dairies in the United States, UNH and the University of Minnesota at Morris. And we have 50 jerseys out there, and so we're doing a lot of research at both facilities. I think at last count we have... at the Fairchild Dairy, three or four projects going on, and at the Organic Dairy, two projects going on. And they tend to be based on nutrition. So, yeah.
So the cow nutrition, lactating cow nutrition and calves.
And calf and heifer.
Yes.
And calf and heifer nutrition.
Calves and heifers. What a lot of people don't know, and they've heard me talk a bit about this on the radio before, Pete, is, you know, I talk a lot about how advancements in not only technology, but research has impacted the dairy industry and dairy producers' ability to, you know, produce more milk using less resources such as land and water, and at the same time having happier, healthier cows. So a lot of the research that you do there sort of revolves around that. And this may be like asking somebody who's your favorite child, but of all the research projects that you've done there, do you have, a top one or two that you look back on and say, wow, you know, we're really proud. UNH was groundbreaking in making that happen or discovering A, B, or C.
Yes. Yes, I do. And there's a lot. I hope all my grad students aren't listening from the past. But there's a couple that come to mind, but there's one in particular that that we just finished up and had it published this year. And so we have to understand the concept of colostrum, and all female mammals produce colostrum after they give birth. And in ruminant animals, so cattle, sheep, goats, moose, deer, it is required that the baby get this colostrum to impart immunity, okay, so health. And they have to get it within the first 24 hours. And there's a lot of research that indicates that how we give it, how we provide it, how much we provide them actually sets them up for a successful life. And actually there's data that says if I feed them 4 quarts of good quality colostrum versus 2 quarts, they'll actually make more milk 3 years down the line just by how I treat them on day one. So to me, that's really fascinating. So one of the premises behind, one of the things that we do is we try to look at how we can make this colostrum better, because it's essentially the first immunization that cattle get. Right. Mm-hmm. So if we can make this colostrum better, we did a study with niacin. Now, niacin is a B vitamin. If you look at your vitamins on the shelf at home, it'll say niacin in it on the label. And we use a specific kind of niacin called nicotinic acid, which all feed mills have. Mm-hmm. And we fed various levels to these dry cows. So cows that are about to give birth, they're not lactating, they're not producing milk right now, but they're going to within 4 weeks. And what we found was we were able to increase the quality of the colostrum that those cows produced at a certain amount, at 32 grams of this niacin a day. That's a big deal. It was quite effective. And we figured out how it happened. And how it happened was it increases the amount of microbes in the rumen. Okay, the rumen's the first part of the stomach and is all full of bacteria. We increase that bacteria in the rumen. These are good bacteria. They flow into the small intestine. They get digested. They become amino acids, the building blocks of protein. They get absorbed. And the protein, the amino acids, become immunoglobulins or antibodies. So that's really what we found out, and we confirmed that this is actually what happened. So we did this at UNH, very happy about that. The neat thing about it, too, is we followed the babies out for 6 weeks, and we saw that these calves actually were more efficient in converting nutrients into growth in the first 3 weeks of life. Okay. So then, what do the calves get? What are the calves eating in the first 3 weeks of life? Most of their nutrition comes from milk. Where does milk get digested and the nutrients absorbed? In the intestine. The only difference in this study was where the colostrum came from. So that indicates that how we fed that cow changed her colostrum in such a way that it imparted changes on her small intestine of her calf.
Wow.
So the calf was more efficient and utilized nutrients better. That's pretty cool as far as I'm concerned. So a farmer can do that and see reap some benefits from it.
it's amazing to me, and a lot of people don't know when I sit on this show, that yes, folks, this is the amount of work and the amount of science that is involved in agriculture and food products. It's not just a dairy farmer in a field, a cow in a field, or milking a cow and bringing it to a processing plant. There is a lot of data and a lot of extremely intelligent people over at UNH who study these kind of things and help our dairy producers make healthier cows, happier cows. And as Pete said right. about the colostrum, mother's first milk within 24 hours, if you can make that as healthy as possible naturally, which is what you did, is absolutely mind-blowing.
Right, right. It's really, really neat. And we've seen, like back when I was in college, you know, if you had a cow produce 20,000 pounds of milk in a year, that was a big Holstein. That was a big, big thing. Now we've got Holsteins producing 40,000 pounds of milk in a year. Why did that happen? It happened through nutrition. It happened through genetics, and it happened through management of the animal in the facilities that they live in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, open barns, the ability for the cows to walk around and choose where they want to lay, the ability to go up and eat when they want, drink when they want, so on and so forth. That has improved the performance of these animals through all the data with genetics, choosing the right bull, and then all the nutrition work that we've done. It's amazing. I mean, my colleagues here are doing work on amino acid supplementation. They're doing work on better forage crops. There's a big red clover study that's about to start at the organic dairy with a lot of colleagues from around the country involved in that. So it's really kind of neat, and it's helped our producers both locally and globally to make more milk efficiently to help basically feed the world.
Mm-hmm. That really is amazing to me that in such a relatively short period of time, I don't know when you went to college, Dr. Erickson, but in a relatively short amount of time, you were able to double the production of those Holsteins that you talked about from 20,000 pounds a year to 40,000. I mean that.
Yeah, the top Holsteins will be 40,000. You know, the average is going to be around 26,000 for
so,
a typical.
Yeah,
I mean 20,000 back in 1982. That tells you how old I am. you know that
still,
was you know your that cow young. And your farm got on a bulletin that the dairy farmers got. So it was a big deal.
I guess.
And
so.
Now 20,000 pounds is pretty common.
Yeah, that is really amazing. You know what amazes me even more than that is the fact that you walk into the grocery store and really, relative to other products that you buy at a grocery store, milk is so, when you think about it, so inexpensive. I don't know. It really is. I think it's the best bargain in the supermarket. I truly do.
Oh yeah, and I have friends who are all around the country, and I have a lot of friends in Wisconsin for obvious reasons. And I tell them what our milk price is in New Hampshire, they don't believe it. That can't be. It's like, yeah, it is, because they actually pay more for milk in Wisconsin.
Wow.
Than we do here in New Hampshire. And Maine pays more, but Maine has a milk marketing system that's fairly complicated, and there's a minimum price that stores can sell milk for, and that money goes back to the producers in Maine through a tier pricing system. So, but really, yeah, you're exactly right. It is a really good buy.
Well, and not only that, it's an excellent buy, but even when you look at the nutrition component that milk provides, it is the most nutrient-rich beverage you can buy. And when you can do that and purchase that at such a reasonable price to be able to feed your family a healthy, wholesome product, you really cannot beat real dairy milk.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Dr. Peter Erickson is with us from the University of New Hampshire. And Dr. Erickson, is it fair to say that UNH is one of the top agricultural colleges in the country?
I would say we're up there. I would say we're small in comparison to a lot of places. We're you know, we're a small school, but we're known. Our research is known around the country, and we're not going to, you know, we're not as big as like Wisconsin or Michigan State or school or Illinois, but we're there, and people know us, and they respect the work we do, and I think we're highly recognized outside of inside and outside of the region. We're people have no problem coming to us for research. They know that there's quality work done here, and that it's a good place to do work.
No, absolutely, and you are very well known for it, certainly in this region. Anyway, what about careers in the field of agriculture?
So I get this question a lot from parents.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and I first say you're not gonna find an ad in a local. Well, you might find it in a local newspaper, but a big newspaper. You're not going to see it in the Boston Globe, for instance, or the Herald or something like that. You're not going to find an ad for, you know, dairy farm manager. You'll find it through the faculty here, and at UNH, the faculty have a really good rapport with our students, and farmers will call us up and say, hey, we've got a management position. You know, do you have people available? So that's one way. We have a lot of people who are out working in the feed industry, mm-hmm. all around the country. We have people who work for USDA, both regionally and in DC. I'm just going down the line of my students. We have students who are farm managers. So it is, people have to eat. That's not going to go away, you know. And so we have to figure out ways to feed them. And I'm writing for a grant right now, and we indicate that the global population by 2050 is going to be 9 billion people. So, and how do we do that? How do we make these animals and food production more efficient? So this upcoming group needs to figure this out. Of my dairy graduates this past year, all of them are gainfully employed in the dairy industry in one way, shape, or form. So either working for farms, milk processing plants, or in industry, they're all gainfully employed. So, there are jobs, and they're good paying jobs. They're good paying jobs. So
that is great to know. That is really good to know. Dr. Peter Erickson is with us, professor, extension dairy specialist, agriculture, nutrition, and food systems. Lots of ground that you cover there at UNH, Dr. Erickson.
I'm a dairy person primarily, and I work with other ruminants as well. So if I can get extension calls on sheep and beef cattle and goats, and that's pretty common to get some calls on that. I have actually done some poultry rations for some farmers as well, but most everything I do is with dairy cattle. Well, we're doing a study right now. We're trying to figure out how come some Jersey cows don't like to produce colostrum in the winter months. And we have a study that's ongoing trying to figure out if it's dietary or genetics or management or what the deal is. So that's a big project that's ongoing, and that's a problem nationally. And it's very funny because some herds experience this and others don't. And it seems to be specific with the Jersey breed. Not so much with Holsteins, but I have witnessed it on a big Holstein farm in Wisconsin that had this problem. So it's we don't really know what's going on, but they don't like to produce that colostrum in the winter for some reason.
Mm.
Could be light, could be daylight, could be diet.
Yeah,
we're trying to figure that out.
Well, it's all very intriguing, and you know, we appreciate what you do, and the UNH is well renowned for its dairy bar, which
yes.
has been there for a long time, and I understand it's open through the summer. So that's a good
yes,
thing.
Yes, it is.
That's a
yes.
good thing. So mm-hmm. that is terrific. Well, Dr. Erickson, we appreciate you joining us here on this edition of Feldis and Kale with Amy Hall of the Granite State Dairy Promotion, and thanks for all the good work you do. Amy, do you have anything else for Dr. Erickson?
Well, he's going to be calling in a few more times throughout the months just to keep people updated on the research. And Pete, I know you're an extremely busy gentleman, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, anytime.
And all the work that you do, this is what happens, folks, behind the scenes. So when I'm on the radio and I talk about sustainability and advancements in the dairy industry, it is people like Dr. Erickson and the other researchers at UNH and the students who actually bring that to our farmers, who implement it and make it happen. So thanks, Pete. We appreciate you joining us.
You're welcome. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Pete.
Take care. Yes.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Dr. Pete Erickson from the University of New Hampshire. And, I was happy to see that even though it's not on the ice cream trail, Amy, that the UNH Dairy Bar is open all summer long.
Yes, absolutely they are. And it's a great place, too, the ice cream bar. They've got sandwiches. It's a cute little lunch facility. I've been there before with former Commissioner of Agriculture, Lorraine Merrill. It's a cute little place. If you find yourself in downtown Durham, drive by the cow barns and wave and understand now that it's not just cows. It's a whole research facility, and swing into the dairy bar. You know, get a sandwich and finish up with some ice cream.
Of course. And it's right there by the train station.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a cute little place.
It is. We will take a break. It is Feldes and Kale, Amy Hall in today for Dan, who will return next week. We're all presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldes and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And I do mean that sincerely, what I was saying with Dr. Erickson. I mean, the price of milk, and I have another little side job that I do some shopping for people. And so I'm in a lot of grocery stores, but it never ceases to amaze me, Amy. You know, the price of milk, it is so low. Comparatively speaking. And eggs, too. Eggs have not gone up very much over the years.
You know, they're the healthiest foods, too. So, I'm going to bring it back to Pete again, is that in agriculture, we have a lot of researchers out there who make sure that these products stay healthy and wholesome. And then also in the dairy industry, you know, we work hard to make sure that those essential nutrients that people need to live healthy lives are affordable. You can walk through a grocery store and you can see all kinds of these, you know, hand-pressed fruit juices, you know, for, you know, $6.89 for, you know, a 16-ounce teeny tiny bottle.
Yeah.
And then you, in comparison, look at a gallon of milk for, you know, $2.98 up to, you know, $3.25, a whole gallon, just full, chock full of natural nutrients. You cannot find a better deal, and you cannot find a more affordable way to support your own health.
That is for sure. No doubt about that. And we will continue our quest, Amy, to complete the ice cream trail. Now, what's the end date? What's the final date that I could complete this?
It should be in there, Ken, but it's Columbus Day weekend. I know it falls on different dates each year. Is it October 18th? I can't keep that. Whatever Columbus Day weekend is, that is your final weekend to wrap it all up. However, I just want to be clear with people. Please call these ice cream shops before your visit, because the ice cream trail ends Columbus Day weekend doesn't mean that, you know, individual shops didn't close on Labor Day. So just make sure while you're planning your route that you're aware of seasonal opening and closing dates. Some of our shops are open 365 days a year. The smaller mom and pop ones, maybe not so much. So just be sure you check in with them before you drive 3 hours to get somewhere.
That is true. And some aren't open every single day of the week.
Correct.
Yeah, so you have to plan that as well. But I've got to bear that in mind, that some may close after Labor Day weekend. But the completed passports are due no later. I'm looking at it right now, October 18th.
Oh, I got it right.
October 18th.
Yes.
Right on the button.
Exactly. See, and what did we just learn here, Ken? Not only is this about eating ice cream, meeting small business owners, and supporting small communities, there's some strategy involved here.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. And, if you do follow the trail, and by the way, the passports are available at all the rest areas in New Hampshire. And I've checked it out, Amy. I've stopped at a few, and they're all there. You did a great job distributing them, and they're all there at each one of the stops on the ice cream trail as well. So if you don't have one, and you go to a spot on the trail, they will have one for you.
Absolutely. But, you know, go to our website, click the ice cream trail, pick a shop you want to start at, and that can be your starting point. Pick up your map there, get your sticker, and off you go.
It's a great way to vacation in your own backyard here in New Hampshire, without question. Great family activity. Amy, thank you for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I hope I did Dan proud. I'm certainly no Dan Feltis, but, you know, I'll sit here for him anytime he needs. And you know what, Ken? Maybe this sabbatical, maybe he will pass you on the ice cream trail.
He might. He just might. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you, Ken.
1450 WKXL 1039 NHTalkRadio.com. Feltis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire Dairy Farmers.